Well, I'm flying in the morning.
Okay, Brian, you're on.
All right, perfect. Okay, we'll get going here. All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting for an informal today on case number PU13-901. The little background on the case, in December of last year, Bakkenlake filed an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct and operate a 132-mile bidirectional crude oil pipeline. We've put an announcement out there that anyone requesting a formal hearing must do so by March 2nd of 2014. That was not requested, so we have set up the informal today. It's Commissioner Fedorchak's portfolio, so I'll eventually turn it over to her. But before that, if I could see if Commissioner Crispin has any comments and then go around the room for who's here, and then I'll turn it over to you, Julie, if that's all right, for your comments.
Thank you. I do not have any opening comments.
Okay. And Julie Prescott's joining us from staff. And if we could, Steve, you guys could identify yourself coming around.
Yes, I'm Steve Greiser, president of Bakkenlake Pipeline.
Lawrence Bender, Frederickson and Byron Law Firm, appearing on this matter on behalf of Bakkenlake Pipeline.
And I'm Darren Snowen, the vice president of Bakkenlake.
All right, thank you, Darren. All right, the nickel is yours, Commissioner.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for being here. I don't have any big grand opening comments. When this application came through, I had to read it a couple times to see what it was you guys were asking for, because I kept going, but this has already been cited. So that's, I guess, the crux of the matter today is I'm interested in knowing what you guys, why you want this and what purpose you see this certificate serving you and why you want it. So otherwise, I think you can go ahead and get rolling on whatever you'd like to present, and then we'll ask questions.
Not that we don't like having you back. We just don't understand why.
Sure. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner. Appreciate that. And I think we'd like to talk a little bit about just what we've done with the pipeline and, you know, where we are now, if you don't mind. That would take a few minutes more. Mm-hmm. But we anticipated that question, and we will provide you with a bit of information on why we would like the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. Since this is an informal hearing, I'm not going to do the typical Q&A approach. Steve's already introduced himself, and I'd just like Steve to talk a little bit about the project, where we are, and then we'll get to the question that you've posed.
Sounds great.
Steve?
Okay, yeah, and thanks again for holding this informal hearing and the opportunity to discuss this request with you all. You know, first, let me update you on Bakkenlake Pipeline and its operations. As you recall, we received a certificate of corridor compatibility route permit in early 2012, and which was amended a couple times after that, you know, primarily as a result of wanting to work with landowners to accommodate their requested changes to vary or adjust the right slightly away from the approved route and or to you know, possibly mitigate or minimize cultural impacts. We started building the pipeline in late 2012. We put it into service in segments. So the first segment went into service in March of 2013, and then the final segment went into service about the end of October of 2013. We were pleased to report to the commissioners that we're transporting 55 to 60,000 barrels a day through the pipeline, all going to the rail terminal in Fryeburg.
What's the total capacity, Steve?
Well, the capacity is dependent on, you know, where the oil comes into the system. You know, we have connections at Johnson's Corner to two gathering systems up there. We have a connection to a growing gathering system at what we call the Watford City receipt point, and there's a truck unload there, and then we have trucks delivering into our Dunn receipt point, and then we're connected to a gathering system down at Belfield. So depending on where the oil comes in the system sort of sets that capacity, so it's sort of a range. So it's sort of in today without putting pumps on it or adding drag reducing agents, you know, it's sort of in that 70 to 75,000 barrels a day range. There are a handful of non-affiliate shippers / customers on the system that have termed up transportation service. There are sort of different flavors. There's producers, there's marketers, there's refiners. We are a common carrier pipeline. We have filed all the required tariffs and rules and regulations with the FERC.
Good question on that, Steve. When you file those, this is certainly outside our jurisdiction, but how does that their approval process work? Is it more of a just a procedural, or do you have to go out and testify to members out there?
It's regulated under the Interstate Commerce Act. The FERC regulates only the tariffs. They don't regulate the construction or the operation of the pipeline like, say, they do natural gas pipelines under the Natural Gas Act. So you file your tariffs, and if you have non-affiliate shippers that support you on that tariff, and you file essentially an affidavit saying that you have that, then you know they unless they get a challenge to those rates, then they accept the rates.
Thank you.
So second thing, after updating on the construction operations, I want to give you an update where we're at on our immediate future development activities on the pipeline. In a sense, what I like to say to our guys is we have some unfinished business, which is to build the remaining portion of the pipeline that has been certificated and permitted. This is from the Johnson's Corner area up to Beaver Lodge. It's about 35 miles. Our expectation is to receive the federal approvals for construction of this portion this year in 2014. We're actively developing future outlets to connect to other destinations, such as other rail loading facilities other than the one at Fryeburg and existing, and to existing and future export pipelines to reach out-of-state markets. Regarding operations and our capability, we have put together an operating team of 17 professionals and supporting staff. They're located in our office just across the river in Mandan, as well as at the operations office, which is near Belfield. We have a 24/7, 24-hour, 7 days a week pipeline control room, staffed by DOT qualified operators. We have an advanced leak detection system, and we do bi-weekly or every other week we do right-of-way flyovers. Darren Snow, who was here, he introduced himself earlier, is responsible for overseeing these operating activities as well as the permitting and right-of-way activities. So in summary, we set out to build a modern, safe, reliable, and efficient pipeline system in North Dakota. Through our tireless efforts to do what we say we're going to do, we have earned high marks and a good reputation with all the important stakeholders, you know, the landowners, the U.S. Forest Service, the BLM, our construction partners, and the other county and state officials and others.
And Steve, before we go to the question that Commissioner Fedorchak has asked, let's just talk a little bit about some of the other future possibilities in terms of what was originally applied for in the corridor certificate and route permit, but then what we actually went forward with at the hearing.
So, so what we've permitted and still plan to complete construction on is that, you know, 132 miles of pipeline. There's 95 miles of pipeline that is in service. Because we crossed federal lands under federal jurisdiction, we had to go through a federal permitting process, which included crossing the lake. And so there was some discussions about construction methodology and having to come up with some additional data to say, prove up that construction method that would be approved. And so that was delaying the construction of what we saw as a pipeline that needed to get built now because of all the growth of production, especially in McKenzie County. So we were able to establish that we had independent utility to build from Johnson's Corner down to Fryeburg. And so we were able to essentially take the EA process and make it into two separate processes. So we went forward and got the EA done for the portion from Johnson's Corner down to Fryeburg. And then we went through essentially got the finding of no significant impact from the agencies on that, which gave us the right-of-way grants to go through the Forest Service land that's in and around the Little Missouri River. And so we went ahead and built that ahead of building the whole entire system, which, we built it and got in service last year, and, you know, all our customers, shippers were thankful that we went to that extra effort to do that. And we built during the winter, and You know, that was a lot of challenges, but again, I'm glad that we did, and so are our customers.
Steve, a quick question on that. The once again, outside our jurisdiction, but I always like to learn. The you go through the NEPA process, and then you said something about once that came back with an EA, then that allowed you to get the Forest Service grant or crossings. How does that interaction tie in?
Well, so essentially what that process leads you all the way to, and I'll give you the short version. I'll let Darren expound on it if you want more detail. But essentially,
I like short versions.
Yeah, well, but essentially what going through all that, getting to finding those new impact, then you can be issued the right-of-way grant for the federal portion of the land.
But the Forest Service participated in the process.
So they were, yeah, they were.
So it's not like you could trump them with the EA. They had to be a stakeholder.
No, they were part of the process. Okay. All under the NEPA process, all the federal agencies have a seat at the table.
That answers it. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
And another question. You've referenced a couple times Johnson Corner. I'm looking at the map. Three Forks and Dry Creek on the map are
generally in Johnson's Corner. So, yeah.
Look, but those are separate input terminals, correct?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, they're connected to two
gathering
systems.
Both in an operator. Where's the line where
those systems are?
It's done already.
Well, those are our system? Yeah, so our system is done up to those two points. So
those two are both done?
Yes. So
the Dry Creek.
So the furthest
terminal is the first thing on the
north end of the furthest origination point that's in service today is the Dry Creek receipt point.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And if Keystone is ever built, can you just talk a little bit about how this pipeline might fit in with Keystone?
Yeah, that's a big
I know it's near and dear to your heart. So.
Yeah, so as everyone recalls, I mean, that was the original premise, was to go down to Keystone XL with this project. That's still, you know, hopeful that will receive its permit. I don't stay up at night worrying about that at the moment like I used to, but the goal was, you know, come back to the commission with a project to build down to Baker and tie into Keystone XL if we get visibility on that permit.
And can you just tell us briefly why Bakken-Link is applying for this Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity?
Yeah, so, you know, under the statute, you know, we believe Bakken-Link Pipeline meets the definition of a public utility. Bakken-Link is a limited liability company engaged in the state of North Dakota to furnish the services of transporting crude oil for the public generally. Second, Bakken-Link has committed to the construction of this pipeline system that we're talking about. And like I said earlier, it's be approximately 135 miles in length, and including going down to Keystone XL and maybe some other projects that we're looking at, it might be another 100 miles of pipeline projects being contemplated above the 135 miles. By doing so, you know, we have committed, Bakken-Link Pipeline is, to spending hundreds of million dollars in construction costs and operating costs for this pipeline. To date, we have spent $139 million of capital expenditures, and I don't know how much more we've spent so far on operating expenses. Our new, you know, it's new pipe. It meets the latest industry standards, or even exceeds those in some cases. And I mean, it was built under DOT specs. You know, we had their inspectors out. We had a lot of environmental inspectors, construction inspectors line. We think we did a really good job building this project. And, you know, the other point I'd like to make is, you know, unlike a number of other pipeline companies that build pipelines in North Dakota we've heard about, you know, they quickly turn around and monetize these investments. You know, we see ourselves operating in the state of North Dakota a long time, serving the producers of this Bakken play. I guess the third point I'd like to make is you know, the reason why we're here, you know, seeking your support for this application is, you know, we've been very careful and prudent how we've approached building this pipeline, and I think everyone appreciates that we've touched the stakeholders, and we seek orderly development of this play and of midstream infrastructure in western North Dakota to try to reach all the markets that are built. You know, we set this pipeline out to be a header system across the play, going from Beaver Lodge all the way down to Keystone XL, ultimately. Why do we do that? We think they'll provide the shippers, producers, access to the best markets that they can get to. So we're looking to maximize connectivity. So when I say header system, I mean maximize the connectivity of this pipeline. So that's number of gathering systems that can feed into it, and then to maximize the number of outlets to get to the best markets. We believe this is the most efficient and prudent and orderly way to develop this Bakken play, which is, you know, it's grown beyond what people have imagined. The key benefits are two. One is that to maximize the capacity of a system that's already built, and it minimizes the duplication of facilities, which we think is in the public interest. We're currently connected, as I say, to Fryeburg Rail Terminal. And like I said earlier, we're contemplating more connections. We're looking at maybe four more outlets on the pipeline. And we're looking at attracting additional gathering systems to tie into the system to feed it with oil. We just think there's a compelling need for a service like ours and a header system like this. I've been advised by counsel that by securing the certificate from the North Dakota Public Service Commission, the Bakken Link Pipeline will be provided notice of any other application for crude oil pipelines in the area. Bakken Link will have a standing to comment on the need for pipelines if the pipeline is similar to and in the area of the Bakken Link Pipeline. And by providing Bakken Link with a standing to comment on future lines, it will help ensure that only pipelines that are needed will be constructed. That will avoid duplication of facilities, which reduces surface disturbance and results in a more environmentally friendly operations and transporting crude oil in the state of North Dakota.
Mr. Chairman, we believe that the application is complete. We're hopeful that the presentation that Mr. Greiser made is helpful to the commission in reaching a decision in this matter. As Mr. Greiser pointed out, Mr. Snow is here. He can answer more questions about operation. But with that, we'd respectfully request that the application of Bakken Link Pipeline, LLC, that was submitted for a certificate of public convenience and necessity be issued. And that's all I have.
Before I forget, will you offer this up as your testimony today?
We sure can, yes.
Yeah, we'd be happy to receive it. They always tell me I should do that in formals just to make sure we keep a clean record.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Portfolio holder first.
Well, I have some questions that aren't necessarily related to this PCNN that we'll maybe go back to. But you outlined some interesting rationale for seeking the PCNN. And I guess, Patrick, I'd be interested in getting your thoughts on what they outlined as well. Do you mind stepping up to the mic? In terms of the standing that a PCNN would get them to comment on future lines and how this certificate might give them notice of any future development in the same area that would be competitive, I would imagine, is what we're looking at here.
I guess I may have missed some of that initially when I was out of the room, but... If another company came in and requested a certificate of public convenience and necessity in the same area, they would have to analyze the impact on other utilities in the area. And I'm not, if you're looking at receiving notice of that other than public notice, I think it would just be our standard public notice that you'd receive any indication that there was another utility that might provide service there?
I think the statute goes a little further than that and says that if there is an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity, the commission is required to give notice to other holders in the area as well as making publication. In this case, my guess is there weren't any other holders, so there was no need to give any other notice. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, even if someone does not make a request for a certificate of public convenience and necessity, by holding such a certificate, I believe that the Bakken Link would have an opportunity to not only have standing if someone requested a certificate, or if Bakkenlink felt like a certificate was necessary, they could bring an application to the commission, and a determination would be made on need. And if it was a pipeline that was necessary or not.
Right.
So I think it gives Bakkenlink an opportunity to make sure that there's orderly development, and that's our position.
Mm-hmm. I believe that's the case. I didn't realize that we had to determine other utilities in the area.
It's in the statute.
Might be an interesting challenge for us, but yeah. We might be able to get some help from.
Yeah. Well, it would only be those pipeline companies that have a CPNN, so right. You wouldn't have to notify every pipeline.
Right.
So I guess in the future, if someone would come in and want to build a pipeline in this area and wanted a certificate of public convenience and necessity, we would be in the notice provision under the statute.
Right. Okay.
Do pipeline companies typically seek these? So I thought this was fairly unusual, and that the common carrier status this isn't required.
It is not required. Well, unless you're a public utility. If you're a public utility, then you do need to get a certificate from us. But a lot more of the companies classify themselves as common pipeline carriers. And in that situation, I mean, that's a different situation than the certificate process. And we haven't had that many, to my recollection, that many that have asked for public convenience and necessity.
Two questions for Mr. Bender. So if another pipeline company were planning something that was similar or might be competitive, but they did not seek the CPCN, then is your reading of the law that you would still be entitled to a notification if you had one?
No, we wouldn't be entitled to any kind of notification, because if they weren't seeking a certificate of public convenience and necessity, you all wouldn't know anything about it. But if we became aware of it, we would have standing to bring an application to the Public Service Commission saying, it's not appropriate for this pipeline to be built because we are already providing the service. There's no need for it. And then the Public Service Commission would have an opportunity to address that issue.
Okay. And when you say in the area, what does that mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, the area is not defined in the statute, unfortunately. It would be up to your good judgment as to whether this is in the one, what is it in the area, and second of all, is there a need for it?
I think it goes to the customers served, possibly, in the area, meaning the customers served by the pipeline that has the certificate mm-hmm. of public convenience.
Is there any process in the designation of a common carrier that looks at competitiveness and need? Duplication of services?
Go ahead. I know. I think I know the answer to it.
I read the common carrier statute recently, but not today. I'm a little hesitant, but my recollection is there's nothing in the common carrier statute that talks about need.
I agree.
Okay.
Although to become a common, if you're not designated as a common pipeline carrier at the federal level, all you need to do to be designated to be a common pipeline carrier at the intrastate level is to file a letter with the commission saying you're willing to be subject to the Chapter 49-19 or whatever it is, common pipeline carrier regulation, statute and rules.
And that probably just means filing tariffs with the commission, typically, right?
We do ask that those companies file tariffs.
Yeah.
I'm not even
But we don't
sure
set them.
We
don't
do not.
We have no
we do
role
not
in
take
setting
action
them.
On the tariff.
Who monitors the I mean, who, is it just the free market that determines whether it's a fair tariff or not?
There's a provision in that law that says if there's a complaint, then they could bring that to the commission, and then the commission can make a determination.
It was like my federal question, same kind of setup.
I think it's probably mm-hmm. tailored yeah. the same way. Yeah.
And it's going to have issues. It's going to have restrictions with respect to not discriminating against shippers as well.
Right.
As a common carrier, you wouldn't be able to do that.
Hmm.
so, another item that you were?
No, I'm just, this is really interesting as a tool for reducing duplication.
And I mean, that's the purpose for it at the federal level. That's the purpose for it, as I understand it, at the state level. I know I haven't done very many of these. I did do one probably, time goes quickly, but probably before Commissioner Kalk was on the commission, right before he got on the commission. It had to do with the Plains pipeline, and it was a pipeline that was coming out of Montana, and there was a segment that came into North Dakota and then went to Trenton, and we obtained a certificate of public convenience and necessity on that line as well.
Has it triggered anything? Have you had any notices as you identified, or
You know, I can't say with 100% certainty. My best guess is probably not. But once again, Plains spent a significant amount of money, not only on the North Dakota side, but on the Montana side, installing this transmission line, and felt very strongly about not being put in a situation where somebody would come in and overbuild after they had made the huge investment.
Now, speaking of that, this is a huge investment, and you'd assume that any company that's coming in could come in to build and compete with you would have to have done an awful lot of research to understand whether there's enough market share to support that kind of investment. Does this sort of naturally take care of itself just because the cost on these projects is so large? Are you really concerned about somebody coming in and competing with you?
Yes. Yes, I am. I mean, you've seen it in other basins. You've seen it with gas pipelines, potentially overbuilding, or situation been overbuilt. Pipelines, oil pipelines, not as much because there haven't been many oil pipelines built outside of North Dakota until mm-hmm. just recently. But it's, yeah, it can be an issue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just a couple quick thoughts. Does this strengthen your standing as you try to get the authority to get underneath the lake? Does it strengthen your standing anywhere else?
No, there's no impact to the EA process that's underway, NEPA process for the remainder of the project that hasn't been built yet.
And then do you have any idea how, if you ever get to another company comes in, they want to build a pipeline, and you've got your PCNN, let's say, how you would even begin to figure out the numbers, like how what capacity is left in your pipeline to what might come out of the play? That seems like to be something that would be very tough to get in the middle of, to have an accurate understanding of what could be produced, because we've never really looked at need on pipelines. You just go through the environmental siting. I'm just curious if you have any thoughts about how that would play out. They'd have a predicted amount, and if they say they need to move 10 barrels a day and you've got 2 barrels of capacity, then they could build it? Or they would have to give you the 2 barrels? That's the question. We may have to work through a lot of this in the work session, but I'd be curious to...
That's an interesting...
It isn't informal.
It's an interesting question because traditionally, when you issue a certificate of public convenience and necessity, you would serve all the customers in the area.
Right.
And so if the customer came along and needed the capacity, like if a customer comes along in Xcel Energy Electric Service Territory, if it's within their territory, they provide service to that customer. They build something to provide service. There may be a request for aid to construction and dollars to pay for that extended service line or whatever it takes. So the interesting question in this situation is, what do you do if you have a certificate of public convenience and necessity and a customer comes along and wants that capacity, wants some capacity? How do you handle that?
Well, common carrier provisions say that they have a right to be a shipper. I can't turn them away. I can't discriminate, as we talked about earlier, against shippers coming into the system.
But if you need more capacity, what are you going to do if you need more capacity?
Well, the rules and regs, you get prorated, right? So under the rules and regs, there's proration provisions that say what happens when you have more shippers than you do capacity.
And those are the FERC rules and regs?
Correct.
Intuitively to me, it makes sense to do a PCNN, but there's a lot of things that I hadn't thought of till right now as we don't want to walk into some pitfalls that we could find a future commission in the middle of
an
oil dispute on pipeline capacity.
I'm a rusty petroleum engineer, but, you know, I think you'd look at, you know, the catchment area, what you define a catchment area of the pipeline is. You define a catchment area of way the competing pipeline might want to come in, and you compare the two, and you have to make some sort of judgment on, you know, the production in the area, the growth of that production, the judgment on the size of the catchment area. But, you know, so it's hard to, you know, that would be the way I would look at it, right, at least as a first step. I mean, there's other steps involved to it, but it's sort of, you need to get your hands around that.
I guess I'd just add to that as well as while it may seem complex and different, you deal with this on a regular basis mm-hmm. when it comes to electric transmission yep. issues.
Absolutely.
So while the...
Just more defined law in place.
Yes, exactly. That's true. But, I mean, really the analysis would be very, very similar. Is there a need? And if there is a need and another pipeline company comes along, do we need the other pipeline company, or can Bakken Link do things to their pipeline to increase the amount of barrels they can move? Commissioner, you asked some questions about, you know, what current volumes are, and you see we can go up to 100,000 mm-hmm. barrels a day. You know, that may take care of things for a long time. It may not, but then that would be an issue that you as commissioners would have to address.
The difference with this, it strikes me, with pipelines is that the pipeline companies come in for a siting certificate to construct and not a PCNN first. So the issue of need doesn't get addressed on the front end because there isn't that process in place right away.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Commissioner, and we talked a little bit about that. I think in this situation, and perhaps Steve can address this in further detail, when the initial discussions were held in terms of building this pipeline, you know, we didn't fully understand just what the capabilities of it were. And I think maybe Steve can do a better job responding to that.
Yeah, as we all have seen in our backyard, you know, the play has really evolved, right? I mean, back in 2008, when we first started looking at building a pipeline up here, or thinking about building one, is, you know, there were studies of saying it's going to grow to 400,000 barrels a day, 500,000 barrels a day. You know, under my direction, you know, we had a study that said 800,000 barrels a day. This is 2008, 2009, right? Now we're seeing studies saying it's going to go, you know, who knows, 1.5 to 2 million barrels a day, you know, maybe more, right? And then you know, where the oil's coming from out of the play, right? You know, earlier it was Montreal County, you know, EOG, Whiting, it was Williams County, and now sort of the center of the play. As more wells get drilled, we understand the geology better, right? We have more data to look at. So the heart of the play has really become sort of in McKenzie County, right? So, you know, this pipeline, you know and I'd say it's not luck. It's a lot of studies gone into looking at how this play might develop. And, you know, this pipeline, once it gets built to Beaver Lodge, will be right through the middle of the play, right? So now it's not just a one-way pipeline from Beaver Lodge down to Keystone XL or wherever, right? It's potentially a bi-directional pipeline that can move, you know, a lot more going two different directions. But, you know, what's the market say, right? Where does the market say it needs to go? Does it need to go on rail cars? Does it need to go, you know, in a sandpiper? Piper pipeline is being considered. Is it?
It's funny you brought that up because I was thinking that would that be okay? And this is a lot of work session questions, I think, but it's good to have an informal setup where. So this pipeline is being under consideration for the commission. So would that mean that if this PCNN was in play, that you could then say, "Hey, listen, we think you don't need that Enbridge pipeline because we can move that," because then where it goes to the markets would probably have a plan.
We can feed that pipeline, right? And we can feed it a lot of oil, right? With a connection. So,
but if you end up hooking to the Keystone, you're an exit out of the region.
No, but, you know, this pipeline can move 100 north, 100 south, right, once it's done. So, you know, what is the capacity of the pipeline when you're doing that, right? But, you know, the oil's going to want to go to the best market, right? So, again, this system is set up with that thought in mind, right? And that's why the ones that are shipping on it, they see that and they, you know, they appreciate that flexibility.
sometimes the best market can be determined by who gains from a particular market. And that's why I asked this question. Is the Freiburg rail terminal yours, or is that a place that you send oil to?
It's not Bakken-Link Pipelines. It's an affiliate company to Bakken-Link Pipeline, but it's not Bakken-Link Pipelines company. So it's, you know, it's a private terminal. It's not a common carrier. It just doesn't fall under the common carrier rules. None of these rail terminals do. It was a means to an end. I mean, it was, again, when XL was time out on that, you know, where do you take the oil, right? And, you know, only way out, other than with a bucket, you know, is probably rail cars or trucks, right? So that's what an affiliate was set up to pursue that project, right?
I'm interested.
But to answer your question, and, you know, that's here in the application too, you know, Bakken-Link Pipeline will connect to other rail terminals too, right? And we'll connect to, you know, Enbridge. We'll connect to other pipelines.
So now that had to be, so that was built to take this oil from this pipeline?
It was built, yeah. Well, it was, let's just put it this way. It could have been built without the pipeline, but it would have been a lot more trucks on the road, right? So it had independent utility from the pipeline.
Okay, so it probably didn't apply so much to this case, but you brought up the potential of connecting to Keystone if that's ever comes a reality. So does this pipeline, as it exists now, and I mean, I know you can add pumps and what do you call the stuff that makes it?
Drag-reducing agent.
Drag-reducing agent.
Yep.
Do those kinds of changes allow it to have enough to make good use of the rail terminal and get the 100,000 barrels over there?
Yes.
You don't have to dig up and replace the whole pipe?
Well, I'd love to feed 100,000 barrels a day in a Keystone XL, but there will be other pipelines feeding it, so... I won't be the only one feeding that.
I have a question.
And this PCNN request is for, are we starting at Freiburg, and does the request end at Dry Creek? Does this request include up to Beaver Lodge if and when that gets built? Does it include anything else? Or
it's for the same project that we have the certificate, the quarter certificate and a route permit. So it's from Beaver Lodge down to Freiburg. That's what we have the route permit quarter certificate on. So it's for that entire route.
Thanks.
Did you want to add to that, Patrick?
Well, I have a question, but
okay.
You go ahead.
One of the questions on the PCNN is the effect on other public utilities providing similar service. You state that everything is at or near capacity, that there's, you know, an under availability of transportation. Who do we serve notice to that they're looking for this in terms of competitive? Is it just the public notice?
That's all we've done so far is the public notice.
Okay. So we're assuming through the public notice that anybody who would object to this or be have anything to say about this would comment, and we've heard nothing.
Correct.
Okay.
Or if I could ask a question about, for public utility, usually in a certificate of public convenience and necessity, we would designate an area served. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious about, to hear some discussion, I guess, about maybe what, if there are pros or cons to doing that in this situation. I can think of a con of not doing it now would be if in someday in the future another pipeline came along and you would come to the hearing and say, well, but we serve that area, but we don't have a designated area, then there would be, you know, I don't know, you'd have to resolve that at some future time. Versus if you establish it now, there wouldn't be any question about this service area of this pipeline.
I'm hesitant because we have not discussed that, but I will offer this. I'd be a little bit hesitant to designate an area because I think we'd be coming back periodically and saying, okay, this is the area where, you know, we're collecting oil from now and putting it into the pipeline, but a month from now or 2 months from now, Now we've brought in a much larger area. So that is the I understand specifically what you're getting at, Pat. There'd be more certainty, and we'd know where we at, where we're at down the road if there was ever a company that wanted to build a line. But you'd probably be hearing from us quite often as the area expands. Steve, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I really don't. I mean, like I said, we just want to make sure that there's orderly development in western North Dakota with these pipeline systems. And so I think it's case by case, right? I don't know what could be built that, you know, you don't want to necessarily come up with an area that doesn't make sense, right, that you have to go back and revise. I think it's just, I wouldn't recommend that, but it's not my choice to say that.
I don't know if revising the area would be such a burden. You know, like you said, make periodic filings asking us to revise your service area, but I guess the commission can.
If it is something we could do without a hearing and just do periodic filings, I don't think that would be burdensome. But to do notice and public, you know, doing the publications and then having notice and opportunity for hearing, I think is probably unnecessary. But certainly, you know, if you want to go that route, we'd probably be acceptable to that. Us.
Yeah. Well, we're just talking. Maybe one of us doesn't even want that right now. Yeah.
No, I understand. Yeah.
I think it's a really good idea to have this discussion, and I think there's a lot of pros of issuing a PCNN. And my concerns aren't so much about giving you the PCN; it's setting it up right in the beginning. So, you know, like if a 8-mile pipeline transmission line pops up, that I'm trying to figure out how you think that it would have to be something that would compete along this whole line, wouldn't it be? That would have to you'd be looking at not if just a 10-mile pipeline popped up in the middle to go from a gathering lines to, if there was a refinery built in there, that would only be major transmission lines that would be your competitors, correct?
I think so. I think the other thing, too, is we may very well see transmission lines that are built that provide more oil to our transmission line, and certainly we wouldn't object to that.
See, what I'm thinking about is, and this is just me off the cuff here, but the order how it's written I think will be very important. We can look back at our previous order on this if we have that one that you referred to, which I'm sure we have it somewhere, about things that we'd put in there on the findings of fact. So I don't know, are you proposing usually on informals we don't really have draft orders. It's something pretty routine, so staff writes it up. This might be something that the company might want to put together a draft order with certain findings to talk about a lot of the questions we're talking about. In the work session, we could tweak it a little bit.
Sure. I think that's entirely appropriate, and we'd be happy to put something together and forward it to Mr. Fawn in Word format. So
Julie's our guru on this one, right?
Oh, okay.
No, but Pat's the old resident expert on about everything, so he gets sucked into these.
Not old. O-L-E.
O-L-E.
O-L-E. Ye-old resident expert.
But does that sound, for Randy and Julie, does that sound reasonable? Because we've got a lot of questions, I think, that I don't know that we're going to get answered today. And
well, there's a lot of
I don't want to give you a PCNN that says nobody else can ever build a pipeline again. But by the same token, I like the fact that
we're not asking for that.
Well, but you look at the other side of the coin, though, of getting under the lake is going to be hard. So if we can somehow force folks to make sure they use the existing route that may be there, that's a good idea. And you could extrapolate that down the region with pipeline safety and monitoring and all those things being a big concern. It does make sense. Just how do we lay it out there?
I mean, we really believe there's a need for orderly development, and I look at this and see Bakken Link as sort of taking a leadership role in that approach, and I think that's very
Have you seen this in other states, Steve? This type of using a PCNN to help trigger that process of looking at
I come from the natural gas world, so you know, whenever you build a natural gas pipeline, interstate. You got to go to D.C. and to FERC, and that's what the process is. You got to show the public necessity. And
so if we take this leap into a new policy of doing PCNNs on pipelines.
Wouldn't be new. We have one, we think.
There's more than one. In fact, I was involved in one where my client fought the construction of a line because we believed we had the we had it covered, and I don't recall what the outcome was.
To your point, it hasn't been used very often.
You didn't lose, did you?
I must have lost if I don't remember the outcome. Try to forget those cases.
Does knowing that that's a possibility for a pipeline company when you're planning construction? So now this one's done already, but
part of it's done.
In future,
business.
In future cases, would that cause someone to be more likely to build something even bigger than they otherwise would because they anticipate that they're going to get a PC&N and be able to kind of have the first shot at additional traffic, as opposed to if we're not issuing PC&Ns and everybody's, well, when we need more, I guess we'll have to build more, but who knows if we're going to get it if we don't have this?
Well, there's that old pipeline engineer that said there's two type of pipelines built, right? One that was shouldn't have been built, and one that was built too small. Right? So, you know, you don't see typically pipelines overbuilt for a reason like that. You know, they're built with commitments from either producers upstream or downstream customers. Could be refiners, could be in the gas world, utilities, things like that, but you won't build it on spec, and you don't necessarily build extra capacity, put extra steel in the ground if you don't think it's going to be used. So, no, I mean, I think I'm answering your question
obviously it would be more, but there's a substantial cost to having a 24-inch pipeline when you only need an 18.
Right, right. It's a lot more steel, and steel's not cheap.
Another question about a service being provided right now. I mean, I probably missed this at the beginning, but right now the line starts at the one that's in service now is at Johnson Corner down to Fryeburg.
Yeah, to be clear, Dry Creek is a receipt point called Dry Creek, and there's one called Three Forks, and they're both in that Johnson's Corner area.
Okay, so then and it leaves the state by rail.
By train. Yeah.
So how does this pipeline, how is it classified as interstate?
Well, Interstate Commerce Act, my understanding, I'm not a lawyer, Lawrence maybe can speak to this, but, you know, just my understanding talking to the FERC lawyers that we use is that, you know, if it's essentially goes interstate commerce, right? Even though it's in the state, the market is out of state, so it's in interstate commerce.
So you're
virtue of that. So there's other pipelines in the state that don't leave the state that are also subject to the Interstate Commerce Act.
I think the language they use is if you introduce the product or the oil into interstate commerce, then it gets regulated by FERC.
But your charge to the producer is for the transportation from Johnson's Corner to Fryeburg?
Yeah, so the tariff that's out on our website, there's a FERC tariff
out there.
So
it's an intrastate transport charge. Right. So I'm assuming that you'd be filing that tariff with us.
We can. That's not a problem. I mean,
seems like
sure,
like it would because you have an on point and an off point in the state. It may be interstate commerce, but there's also this other aspect
basically,
to it.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. We'd be subjecting ourselves to the common carrier statute as well, which we in essence are abiding by it by being FERC regulated, but we can certainly do that.
All right, Julie, you put together a staff memo that was very good. Did we miss anything that you wanted to bring out in this? Are there questions that you had?
Sure, it's covered.
Well, let me talk to Julian. One of the questions.
Make sure you grab a mic. I'm sorry.
When we talked to Julian, one of the questions that we had brought up to her was the. It's item number 5. The commission has to review the financial ability of the applicant to provide the service. And based on what the very limited information that had been provided, she said that she would bring that to your attention. Maybe you'd have something for us.
Yeah, we can.
Could you bring something?
I'm sorry. We can supplement that a bit with. Steve, did you want to discuss that as well? Please.
So this is for Bakken Link Pipeline, LLC. This is our balance sheet statement. Like I said earlier, you know, we've invested about $139 million to date in capital expenditures, plant, property, and equipment. And so this reflects the balance sheet. Bakkeling Pipeline is a private company. Typically, we don't, you know, issue these sort of statements. The company's owned by individuals and institutional investors.
And maybe just a question, Steve. When I've done some of these requests for a certificate of public convenience and necessity in the past, I've presented a lot of information. In fact, typically what I would do is provide the commission with a copy of an annual report. But in those situations, I was dealing with a public company. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
In terms of public versus private?
Well, yeah, why you're probably not sharing as much as a public company might.
Well, just, yeah, well, public companies are required under, you know, under the whatever regulations are to provide that information. So typically, we don't provide this this information beyond this. I mean, we do have the capability to expand the system. I mean, we're making money now. You see our tariffs. I told you what kind of volumes we're moving through it, so... I mean, I'm willing to provide more information if you need beyond, you know, what our balance sheet says here.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I would need much more than that. But that's one of those things in the order, that provision that the company agrees to something that would reference this.
Yep.
Hope Ryan, our attorney, you're listening to all this, Ryan?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, anything else, Julie?
Yes, we would run this information passed by Mike Diller and see if that's who we asked about the financial integrity initially anyway, and we'll see if he sees everything at least enough to make that determination on financial fitness.
Now, would this... Okay.
If we need additional information, if we could get back to you.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Yes, just let us know.
Would this just apply to other pipeline companies, the PCNN, not other transportation means? So you're, you know, because in electricity, there's only electricity that you're competing and looking at, not duplicating. But here you're, you know, somebody could develop a new rail facility or somebody could, that would be a competitor to this. That would are you looking at the PCN as just being a tool to look at the orderly development of pipelines and to minimize duplication of pipelines or minimize duplication of competitive transportation infrastructure for oil?
The former, just with respect to pipelines. I don't believe that... we would have the ability to request that. Not that I want to tell you how your authority might be limited, but I think there would probably be a challenge if someone suggested that, okay, you've got a trucking company, now you're competing with my pipeline, so don't let the trucks haul that. I don't think anyone would determine that you have the authority to do that. So it's pipelines versus pipelines.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Julia Prescott.
Thank you.
All right. Patrick?
Good.
Ryan, is there anything that you had just itching to ask from the back row there?
No, I just wanted to
grab a mic.
I just wanted to reaffirm what Mr. Bender said, that motor carriers and electric public utilities are specifically exempt from the 49-3.1, this provision of the CPNN law. So,
motor carriers and...
And electric utilities, yeah. So.
And I think the motor carriers are exempted because there was deregulation of the trucking industry a number of years ago, and I believe the electric carriers are excluded because they're under a different chapter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Commissioner Fedorchak, anything else?
I don't.
Randy?
I don't.
Company, anything else?
Nothing further.
I think let me just throw this out here. If you want to provide a draft order, I think we'll schedule a work session. I'm pretty sure we'll need a work session on this one.
Okay.
Is there a urgency that
2 weeks, 4 weeks? What's your time frame that you're trying to wrap this up on?
There's no particular urgency. I mean, we wouldn't want it to linger on for a long period of time, but 2 weeks, 4 weeks is not going to be a problem. We know this is certainly new for this commission, and want you to take your time and be comfortable with the order you write. And so, no urgency.
If you can get that to Julie Prescott, and Ryan will have a look for it, and let's schedule a work session on this, and then we'll move judiciously forward.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Going once? Going twice? All right, we'll close the informal. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.